Are you one of millions of borrowers across the U.S. trying to figure out how to repay your student loans? The rules have changed multiple times in recent years. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to explain the rules and discuss a new grant to help students afford college are University of Cincinnati Vice Provost for Enrollment Management, Jack Miner, and National Higher Education Reporter for The Washington Post, Danielle Douglas Gabriel. Thank you both for being here, Jack and Danielle.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me.
Danielle, the rules related to student loan repayment have changed so much over the past few years. Walk us through what's changed, the caps on borrowing, how quickly borrowers have to pay off their loans, all that stuff.
Sure. So, I mean, one of the biggest changes until recently, that is, was the introduction of the SAVE repayment plan in 2023, which shortened the timeline for loan forgiveness and required borrowers to pay less on their income towards their loans than other plans. About 8 million people enrolled in the plan until it was halted by a series of lawsuits challenging the legality. But the one big beautiful bill that was signed into law last year ends the plan and phases out many of the other repayment plans. And here is kind of where the landscape really starts to change. So starting after July 1st of this year, anyone who borrows after that date will only have two repayment plans instead of the seven that currently exist. There will be a standard one that can stretch payments out from 10 to 25 years, depending on the size of your debt. And then there'll be another plan that ties monthly payments to a borrower's income with the promise of canceling the balance after 30 years of repayment, so 5 years longer than many of the current plans. And for people who are currently repaying their student loans, they have until 2028 to switch out to either one of the newer plans or an old income-based repayment plan that will remain in place. It's pretty dizzying and very confusing. I've heard from lots of borrowers who are still trying to figure that out. And that's only on the repayment side. There are also new caps in place for master's degree programs, as well as Parent Plus loans. They're the Grad Plus program, which afforded borrowers who are pursuing graduate degrees the ability to borrow up to the full cost of attendance. That's going away this year. In its place, borrowers can still borrow from the federal government for their graduate degrees, but at a cap of $20,500 a year for graduate students and $50,000 a year for professional students, think doctors, lawyers, and the like. Students in total will now have a lifetime maximum borrowing limit of $257,000 for undergraduate and graduate loans combined. Parents will also have new caps. Previously, they were able to borrow up to the full cost of attendance for their student. Now, starting July 1st, the program will have new limits of $20,000 a year or $65,000 in total per student. So that's a lot to digest, but that's kind of how the landscape is changing right now.
That sure is a lot to digest, and we're going to get into some of those specifics with the caps and undergrad and graduate school and all that stuff. Danielle, I wonder, how does all of that affect the federal government's income contingent repayment plan? Is that the one of the ones that's kind of going away?
It is. It will be going away for current borrowers as of July 2028. So if you're enrolled in that plan, you have to switch out by that date, either into one of the new plans that take effect later this year, or the old income-based repayment plan, which is still around, but only for folks who are currently repaying their loans. And that's important because that IBR, income-based payment plan, is the only earnings-based plan that will be available for Parent Plus borrowers. So for families who are struggling to make payments on their Parent Plus loans, this is the only option that will tie their monthly bill to their earnings. So it's likely to be more affordable than the standard plan.
Is the pay-as-you-earn repayment option going away too? Is that one of the
gone too?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow. Well, Jack, Danielle was just talking about how 8 million borrowers, I think she said, were part of this SAVE plan that's going away and they need to move on to some other repayment plan. Jack, do borrowers have to initiate that change? How does that work?
Yeah, so one of the things that I always recommend is that the people who've already borrowed money, so the people who already have student loans, especially if they've been participating in the SAVE program, that they absolutely reach out to their servicer. One of the things that I think People get overwhelmed by the information coming out related to student loans, and you only think about it impacting students that are taking out new loans or families that are taking out new loans. And this is absolutely something that's going to impact people who already have loans. In many cases, have been really satisfied and really happy about the way that SAVE has impacted them over the last few years, and that this is absolutely going to kind of upset the apple cart to some of what their payment plan is. So one of the things that frequently happens is people kind of put their head in the sand and kind of go dark. But this is one where we're absolutely recommending folks reach out to their servicer and have a conversation about what are their options and what payment plan will they be able to go into.
Jack, how confusing is it for borrowers right now? I mean, this is one of those times where I'm really glad to be a really old person because paid my loans off a long time ago. Very grateful for that. How tough is it? How confusing is it? How are people really struggling to keep up with this information?
I think not only is it tough, but I think it's also in many ways shutting the door to college and especially shutting the door to master's degrees for a whole series of students. And one of the things that I think the conversation about this has left out or has not really emphasized is so much of the conversation around college and affordability and student loans is always about the student themselves and the borrowing. This one's really important because one of the conversations that we just talked about was that idea of parents are now limited from their PLUS loan options. So this is now me as a parent being limited how much I'm able to take out as a loan to pay for my kid to go to college. And so that's really kind of impacting how I manage my finances in a way that I wouldn't have otherwise. And again, taking away some options on how I would have made college an opportunity for my child. So it's both confusing and then it's also really challenging just from the opportunity for affordability. One of the things I would say on the graduate side that I think has been really confusing and somewhat contentious, frankly, is that piece of what is the limit that graduate students can take out? You know, so that limit is about $20,500. That rarely covers what graduate level tuition is.
That's for a master's degree.
So again, you're already at the point where essentially your living expenses, which in the past you could have taken out as part of a graduate plus loan, is really now on your own. So you're now going to see a lot of students that are pursuing a master's degree that may not be able to do that full time or maybe looking for a sponsorship from a university. But the other piece that comes into that is what it looks like for the difference between graduate students and professional students or master's students, professional students, because that whole professional distinction has really caught a lot of disciplines off guard. So some things that many of us think of as a very professional degree are things like a nursing degree or a psychology PhD or a degree in physical therapy that's a doctorate. Those are no longer considered a professional degree for terms of the $50,000 per year loan amount or $20,000 a year per year loan amount. And that's really going to catch a lot of students off guard as they're starting to plan for grad school.
Wow. Danielle, what was the political rationale behind these changes? I mean, was the idea, hey, students are they're drowning in debt, so let's limit how much debt they can take out? I mean, what was the political rationale here?
It really was that, you know, the federal government is way too deep into the student lending business, and particularly for graduate lending, the amount of debt that graduate students have been taking out, and to the extent to which that I think maybe 40% of new loans that are being originated are for master's programs or advanced degrees, which was a remarkable difference than, say, a decade or two ago. And a lot of that was because of the Grad PLUS program. And so a lot of lawmakers, particularly conservative ones, felt that program needed to be reined in. So getting rid of it, imposing caps would hopefully reduce the amount of lending. And also they say that maybe force schools to lower their tuition. But, you know, in talking to many schools since that bill was passed, I don't foresee that happening anytime soon. I mean, there's a lot that goes into the operation of these programs, of these schools. And oftentimes the cost, the price that students are paying is not enough to actually cover the cost of their education and keeping these universities open. So I don't know if we're going to see that as a benefit of this law the way lawmakers had hoped, but I certainly do think there you will see students who are unable to afford advanced degrees and parents who are unable to help their students finish their degrees.
We're talking about new repayment rules for federal student loans, and we're going to talk about a new program at the University of Cincinnati aimed at making college more affordable. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Jack, a little bit later, we are going to talk about this program, I promise. I didn't just trap you here to talk about anything, all this other stuff. But, you know, Danielle just mentioned that some lawmakers were hoping these caps would kind of, you know, put the squeeze on higher education institutions a little bit to lower costs. But, I mean, they're nonprofit institutions. Right. You got to pay the professors and the people who are teaching. How much wiggle room is there? Do you have any sense for that, at least at the University of Cincinnati?
Yeah, I guess I would say go a little bit further than that and say that one of the things that I think is troubling about this is there were absolutely ways that the legislators could have gone about controlling the costs of higher education. Frankly, I think the state of Ohio has done a really great job of that. So the state of Ohio, for example, implemented tuition guarantees a few years ago. That was mandated. The state of Ohio mandates how much tuition can increase year over year. So again, there's states like Ohio that are doing a really good job of providing limits and controls around the affordability of college. One of the things that worries me about restricting student loans and about using the student loans as kind of a carrot and stick model is essentially it's universities would never be able to reduce their tuition by the amount that student loans were cut. So again, that example for a graduate student is literally able to borrow about a third to a quarter of what they would have been able to borrow in the past. So no institution is going to be able to cut 75% of their tuition rate. So again, it really is creating that scenario where college, and especially a master's degree, becomes affordable for so many fewer students, and it completely changes the demographic of who a master's degree is available for. And I think when you think about the broader why, you know, the education system is not just about educating the individuals. It's also about creating a stronger society, creating a stronger workforce, creating a stronger economy. And I think that's where we're going to really see this catch up with us in a few years is we will absolutely see a shortage in a whole series of industries that require or need a master's or doctorate degree.
Well, we will continue this conversation after a short break. And later in the program, we'll discuss the impact Ohio property tax reforms could have on local governments and levies. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation on new rules for federal student loan repayment and a new program at UC that aims to make college more affordable. My guests are University of Cincinnati Vice Provost for Enrollment Management, Jack Miner, and National Higher Education Reporter for The Washington Post, Danielle Douglas Gabriel. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. So, Jack, we've talked about all of these changes and the potential impacts for people. Did any of these changes factor into UC's decision to launch this Bearcat affordability grant and briefly explain what the grant is?
Yeah, absolutely. This was something we've talked about and dreamed about for a number of years, but the timing was just perfect for us to be able to launch this new grant program. So the Bearcats Affordability Grant Program is really an investment in the city, an investment in Ohio. And what it allows is families who make less than $75,000 a year, their child, their student can go to University of Cincinnati completely tuition free. And what we're doing is really building on students that are getting a Pell Grant and we're covering the remainder of the tuition. And then some students may also get merit scholarships on top of that. If you get merit scholarships on top of that, that goes towards other expenses. So it really does allow you to maximize this grant and make college more affordable for such a broad range of students. It's available for any new incoming student this fall, and it's available for any student from the state of Ohio. So it is specific to Ohio. The magic of that is, I always hear from folks, especially in Kentucky, of why not me, why not us? It really is that at the end of the day, we're a state institution, and that was a really big part of our value system to be able to give back to the state of Ohio and make that investment, especially in Cincinnati.
So just to make sure I understand, if a student gets a merit scholarship, they can use that to pay for books or
housing. Absolutely.
Okay. What do you anticipate in terms of the number of students applying to UC who will be eligible for this grant?
Yeah. So we anticipate that will change over time. So the reason we did this and the reason we launched it is this is providing an affordable option for students that are already going to University of Cincinnati, so students that would have already chosen us. But we really wanted to use this as a trigger to drive behavior and to get more kids who are in junior high, who are in high school, to think, oh, I never thought I was going to be able to afford college before. And now I'm going to be able to afford college. This is going to give me a gateway. And so these are students that are some of our brightest students. We see this in Cincinnati all the time. Some of our brightest students who absolutely could have excelled at University of Cincinnati, could have excelled at college, but just absolutely could not afford it. And so it's allowing us to make that difference and really increasing it. So we actually imagine that we will see an increase in the number of students overall enrolled at UC because of this, and especially in this population.
And this is for undergraduate only,
undergraduate only.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay. Well, I want to come back to some of these questions that we were talking about earlier about graduate degrees. Danielle, you were talking about how now there are these caps on what students and what parents can borrow to help their students pay for master's degrees, advanced degrees. How are state-based nonprofit lenders factoring into this in terms of trying to meet the need that maybe is out there?
So there are about 24 state-based nonprofits that offer student loans, and many of them are anticipating their businesses will grow once the federal lending caps take effect, especially for graduate student loans this summer. Many of these lenders have lower interest rates than the federal student loans do, but they also have tougher underwriting standards. So that could shut a lot of people out who have weak credit profiles, unless they can get a cosigner, which also could be a stumbling block for students who don't have creditworthy adults in their life who could help them with that. So it certainly could solve a problem for a sliver of the population that will exceed the caps put into place this summer, but it's not a panacea that we would hope for all the folks who could be shut out by these new caps.
So Danielle, it sounds like you're saying that for students from low-income families, maybe their parents haven't had a chance to build up credit, they're not in a position to have great credit scores or cosign, that this really wouldn't be helpful for them.
Unless some of these states are able to figure out a way around it. I know in Connecticut, for instance, there is legislation that's making its way through the General Assembly to help their state-based lending authority, CHESLA, create a program whereby the state would kick in, I think, about $10 million, and the student loan authority would kick in about $20 million. That $10 million could be a way to kind of protect against losses if CHESLA were to lend to folks who are a little further down the credit profile. So that is one of the ways we could see other states try to address that population by having the state kick in some money. Now, considering the current economy and some of the projections of lower tax revenue that some states have, I don't know how feasible that would be to replicate elsewhere. It's still unclear whether Connecticut will be able to adopt that, but that is one of the ways some of these state lenders are trying to find a way to help that population of students.
Jack, are Ohio's universities and colleges coming together to talk about whether there's anything they can try to do differently to deal with these caps for loans for graduate
degrees? We are. One of the great things about Ohio is we have a really strong Department of Higher Education, and I think they've really helped initiate these conversations to think about, are there investments that the state can make in making things more affordable? And what are some of the things that we can do as a state to reduce costs? I think you're seeing a lot more programs like what we did. So you're starting to see more institutions that are making an investment, especially in lower and middle class families being able to still be able to see a college degree. But you're also seeing a lot of opportunities for universities collaborating more to make sure that there's opportunities for efficiency as well. You know, we have always have had a really incredible partnership with Cincinnati State, for example. And one of the things that we talk about a lot for undergraduate students is one of the most affordable pathways for an undergraduate student can be starting at one of our regional campuses, starting at a community college like Cincinnati State, getting a year or two under your belt, and then coming to Uptown campus. And that really, that partnership and making sure that credits are always transferable and it's a smooth pathway always makes a huge difference.
Yeah. Jack, I want to go back to borrowers who have finished their educations and they're trying to make their way through all these rule changes and all that stuff. What is your advice to borrowers if they're really worried, I can't afford my repayments now?
Yeah, it would absolutely be, again, to work with your servicer. I think one of the things that we saw, and this was really a danger kind of leading into a lot of the loan forgiveness programs. So kind of in the kind of early 2000s, you know, if you remember when we had the housing loan crisis, there were a lot of people predicting that our next big crisis was going to be the student loan crisis because so many people couldn't afford it. And part of what was happening at that time was so many people were going dark. So they were stopping the repayments and going into default, but not following up with their servicers. And so that's one of the things that I think is really important to stay engaged with that. Part of the reason is because I think we've seen this right now. There's a pendulum that's kind of swinging back and forth on a lot of political issues. Student loans is absolutely going to be one of those hot topics that will continue. One of the things that I always encourage people to do is continue to be current and continue to be engaged on your student loan, because if there is ever a different repayment program, if there is ever a different forgiveness program, all of them are very frequently based on whether or not you've been keeping current with your existing plan. So again, keeping current with your current payments usually opens up opportunities whenever there's a new model that comes forward. And I think, again, we can never predict the future, but realistically, we're likely to see in the next 5 to 10 years a big pendulum swing back the other direction with more options down the road.
So. Yeah. Danielle, Jack was talking about how this new grant program at the University of Cincinnati could boost the number of students who apply to UC. College has gotten so expensive, it seems to get more expensive every year. Danielle, is that having an impact nationwide on the number of students who are applying for college and on acceptance rates? Do you think these student loan changes could have an impact on that nationwide?
I mean, it's kind of a little too early to tell, but I do think for on the graduate side, we could see an effect, definitely. I will say, to Jack's point, that there are a lot more schools that are offering these sorts of free tuition coverage programs. We've been chronicling those programs. And actually, I have a story coming out soon, a database looking at all the schools that offer them across the country. And it's grown tremendously in the last 5 years. And I think a part of that is colleges recognize the challenges of affordability and want families to understand that there is an option for them. I think students are still greatly interested in higher education. Some of the Clearinghouse data we saw coming out about fall enrollment shows that while, you know, certainly not the strongest it could have been, enrollment overall, when you look at undergrad and graduate, is the highest it has been in the last 10 years. And I think that speaks to the belief that higher education is still a sound pathway to a stable and economic mobility in a way that hasn't changed as much as all of the stories you've probably seen about people losing faith in the system. And colleges are trying to respond in kind by finding ways to make it more affordable.
Well, I have been talking with University of Cincinnati Vice Provost for Enrollment Management, Jack Miner, and National Higher Education Reporter for The Washington Post, Danielle Douglas Gabriel. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thanks, Lucy.
Thank you.
Up next, the impact Ohio property tax reforms could have on local governments and levies. This is Cincinnati Edition.